Ke ntate Maesela. Ke leloko la komiti ya tsa bophelo mo palamenteng. Ke a leboha.
Good morning, dumelang. My name is Patricia Kopani. I'm a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Miswa James, member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mahlwanzi Machapta, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Malvona Precious Matoso, and the Director General of Health.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Alvin Pilling, DDG in the National Department of Health.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Joe Khatlan, Ministry of Health.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lucinda LaRue. I'm from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Natalie Myatt, and I am representing the National Institute of Communicable Disease on behalf of Professor Shabir Mahdi.
Morning, Chair, Committee Members. My name is Tim Tucker. I'm here in my personal capacity as Board Member of the NHLS, as well as representing the Board Chair, Professor Eric Buch.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Cindy Lesotlana from National Department of Health.
Good morning, I'm Mary Ross. I'm representing the NHLS board.
Good morning, my name is Joe Maina. I'm the spokesperson for the Department of Health.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I am an observer. I'm the president of the South African Medical Research Council.
Good morning, my name is Oluwole Oluwakemi. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. I'm a monitor.
Good morning, members. My name is Suan Isaac. I'm the Parliament's Legal Advisor.
Thank you. Did you hand over to you in terms of the presentation?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Yesterday we presented on the NHLS, and currently there are institutions that were just bundled with NHLS and they shouldn't have. And we're using this opportunity to create them, like we introduced the subject yesterday, a separate institution through a specific law that establishes. Chair Dr. Pile will present again today, but I wanted to premise this by just saying that historically we had across the whole world different institutions that are created to promote public health, and it is in this respect that we would like the National Public Health Institute to be created. In particular, I want to draw the attention of the committee to the events that happened in West Africa. I'm sorry, I'll keep on referring to that because this is largely also linked to that. The Ebola outbreak demonstrated in West Africa that most member states are subject to international law, international health regulations, and we are state parties that have agreed to comply with international health regulations. But what has happened is that in most instances, countries tick a box to say they are compliant and that they have core capacities. But what came out of the West African experience actually demonstrates that on paper, countries say they comply, but in real life, they don't. And this law is actually helping us to codify what is provided for in the international health regulations by ensuring that the relevant institutions are in place. At an appropriate time, Chair, will you try and get copies of the international health regulations, because this institution is supposed to help us with epidemic preparedness. It is supposed to also help us with the response. And in terms of international health regulations, it's actually not about disease outbreaks only. It is also about disasters. Like we've seen in the Western Cape, we have disaster management agencies. But with such instances, you do get cholera outbreaks, for instance. It is this body that is supposed to respond. We've seen the Ebola outbreak recently in DRC. But what exacerbates that, in fact, if you looked at the news headlines today, from a humanitarian perspective, you see there's also conflict in CAR, and CAR borders with DRC, Chair. So you actually get migration, and migration of people from CAR to DRC. So there's already a risk of people who are migrating to a country that has an Ebola outbreak. So you can imagine the type of disaster you anticipate through that migration. So this body is also supposed to monitor trends in terms of where outbreaks are, what types of outbreaks, and work with other relevant institutions. So it is in that respect I'm giving this background, so that we need to understand what this body is about. Chair, without sidetracking, I'm currently the chair of the Independent Oversight and Advisory Committee on Emergencies for the whole world. Anything from conflicts in Syria, Iraq, to natural disasters, as well as disease outbreaks, because all of them are connected. So this is a very important law for our country. And over to you.
Thank you, DJ. So the structure of the presentation is to first go through current scenario, and then to provide an outline of how the structures of public health institutes in other countries are structured before getting into the public structure. So the bill, the purpose of the bill is to establish NAPISA as a legally defined organ of state. There clearly are pockets of excellence across the country in terms of communicable and non-communicable disease surveillance systems. And these systems are currently managed by different institutions, and there's no unification about these systems working together under one single organization or umbrella as such. So the intention is to provide a coordinated and integrated disease and injury surveillance data. And the strategic objective was listed in the Department of Health's plan from 2015 to 2020, which is to improve the performance of the national health system and thereby enhance health system effectiveness. So NAPISA is intended to help enhance the effectiveness of the health system. So in terms of challenges, the challenges exist in terms of the coordinating and the analyzing of information across various sources. So the manner in which the public health challenges have been addressed in South Africa have been unidirectional and largely geared towards the provision of health services for the ongoing threat of infectious diseases. So the question may be asked, why NAPISA? Why are you creating this organization? Well, currently there's no integrated surveillance system, as I indicated earlier, and different institutions are dealing with different aspects of surveillance, and there is a lack of institutional capacity for effective surveillance. Secondly, there is a need, therefore, to have a single accountable authority, and this lack of accountability is a cause of the fragmentation in the surveillance data. There is also current evidence which is subject to inaccuracies depending on the source of the data, etc. fourthly, a higher cost could be incurred by the department due to the fragmentation, and this will lead to the quantitative substantiation of the quantitative assessment. South Africa's public health entities have different mandates and institutional arrangements, and so the lack of a coordinated human resources puts an additional strain on the limited expertise that we have in the country. And then finally, I think the point that we made yesterday, funding for these functions are inconsistent, and we need to have a more sustainable approach to the way we fund these organizations, given they're a national resource of great importance. So if we look internationally, some countries first formed a national public health institute in response to specific public health threats, and later then focused on the more broader public health issues. So if I can move to Canada as the first example. In 2004, Canada established the Public Health Agency of Canada to respond to severe acute respiratory syndrome, what was known as SARS at the time. Canada's difficulties with SARS outbreaks between 2002 to 2003 highlighted the deficiencies in their public health system, including absence of protocols for data sharing, difficulty with timely access to laboratory testing, the lack of surge capacity in clinical and public health systems, as well as weak links between public health and personal health systems. If we go to the U.S., which is another example, and the U.S. is known as the CDC, which is the Centers for Disease Control, in 1946, the U.S. government established the CDC to focus on malaria control and other communicable diseases through the coordinated laboratory and epidemiological functions. Over a few decades, the CDC then expanded its role to include non-communicable diseases, injuries, birth defects, occupational and environmental health, and emergency preparedness. The CDC is now the United States' premier public health organization, and the CDC leadership has expanded its agency's core laboratory and epidemiological functions to include workforce development, health promotion and prevention, and monitoring the country's health status. As the CDC has expanded, additional health issues and core functions often developed by establishing new units such as the National Center for Injury Control and Prevention, as well as the National Center for Health Statistics. If we move to the UK, which is another example, more recently the UK established the Health Protection Agency, the HPA, as a special authority in England and Wales under the National Health Services Act of 1977. To provide a more effective and systematic response to certain public health threats. The HPA consolidated four institutions and collectively addressed infectious diseases and chemical, biological, and radiological hazards, and assumed responsibilities for the core functions of the four institutions previously performed. The Public Health Laboratory Service initially raised concerns that the public health services could be fragmented and less coordinated by restructuring services. However, over the past decade, HPA has been able to raise the standard of health protection services, which is consistent with the services around the country, and maintain effective coordination of both national as well as local services. In addition, the HPA has been able to translate the scientific findings into public health practice, which will more effectively be dealt with as opposed to separate institutions. If we move to Mexico and China, which is another example, provide examples of middle-income countries that have been able to perform a similar function. The Mexican NPHI was created in 1987 with Mexico's Ministry of Health after the Mexican School of Public Health merged with the Population Health Research Center for Infectious Disease Research. Mexico's goal was to strengthen their health system and to improve response to public health challenges by consolidating the functions into a single organization, including research, academic training, and to develop the public health workforce and continuing education in these areas. Some of the other functions and operations that were consolidated under the NPHI are the national health surveys, the surveillance work, the diagnostic technologies as well as services for communicable diseases and evaluating other services that may be provided. Among the successes, Mexico's NPHR has been able to influence important public health policies related to tobacco control, to obesity, cancer prevention and control amongst women as well. If we go to China, which is another example from a developing country, China provides another example in that in 1998, China formed the Shanghai, the China Center for Disease Control and Prevention to address the country's increasing life expectancy, communicable and non-communicable diseases. The Shanghai CDC consolidated 7 institutions and coordinated their function, for example, surveillance and preventative medicine research. China experienced several benefits from bringing together the 7 institutions under the Shanghai CDC. And this was not limited to a single institution, and more coordinated and effective public health resources, better management, fewer duplicative functions, as well as the cost savings. The International Association of Public Health Institutes as well has been describing and setting out a set of core functions that countries should consider when sharpening their focus on public health. The definition of core functions of a public health institute are based on essential public health function framework that was outlined by the institutes and were originally developed by the WHO's PAHO regional office. The essential public health operations of a national public health institute are surveillance, identifying health problems and hazards in the community, preparedness and planning, health protection operations in environmental health, occupational health, food safety and others, disease prevention, health promotion, evaluation of quality and effectiveness of personal and community health services, assuring that there is a competent health and personal health workforce, providing leadership, governance, and development and planning of the public health policy in any health-related research. The National Institutes of Health mission is to seek fundamental knowledge about the nature and behavior of living systems and apply this knowledge so it can enhance the length of life, reduce illness and disability. The goals of the agency are to foster fundamental creative discoveries, innovative research strategies, to also develop, maintain and renew scientific, human and physical resources that will enable the nation to deal and prevent diseases, expand the knowledge base on medical and associated sciences in order to enhance the nation's economic well-being, and to exemplify and promote the highest level of scientific integrity.
No, the chair, you may want to know why include the National Institute of Health. The National Institute of Health is an equivalent of the Medical Research Council, and I think the president of the Medical Research Council, who are actually making a distinction between functions of a body like CDC and NIH. In South Africa, the functions of medical research councils and the and National Public Health Institute, so that it's clear that one is a research institution and the other one is public health. But both may have certain mandates in terms of the type of surveillance they conduct. For instance, in the case of NAFISA, they need to do ongoing surveillance so that we know what the disease profile is. And we also need to know whether we're making a difference relative to the interventions that we have considered to respond to major public health challenges. While MRC's core mandate is research, they also do some level of surveillance. But it is also to answer specific questions. This is very specific to public health, and we're drawing that distinction so that as we discuss, it is very clear that there is that distinction, and we thought we'd use a similar example of a country that has both institutions that coexist.
So in realizing these goals, the NIH provides leadership and direction to programs and supports research relating to the causes, diagnosis, prevention, and cure of human diseases, processes of human growth and development, biological effects of environmental contaminants, understanding mental, addictive, and physical disorders, and also directing programs for the collection, dissemination, and exchange of information in medicine and health. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that DG is talking about, which is the organization which would be equivalent to NAPISA, serves as a national focus for developing and applying disease prevention and control, environmental health, health promotion, and health education activities designed to improve the health of the people of the United States. To accomplish its mission, the CDC identifies and defines preventable health problems and maintains active surveillance of diseases through epidemiological and laboratory investigations, data collection, analysis, and distribution. It also serves as a public health service as a lead agency in developing and implementing operational programs relating to environmental health problems. Thirdly, it conducts operational research aimed at developing and testing effective disease prevention, control, and health promotion programs. It also administers a national program to develop recommended occupational safety and health standards and to conduct research training and technical assistance to ensure that the working and environment of every person is safe, develops and implements a program to sustain strong national workforce, conducts a national program for improving the performance of clinical laboratories, and the CDC is also responsible for controlling the introduction and spread of infectious diseases and provides consultation and assistance to other nations and international agencies to assist in improving the disease prevention and control, environmental health, and health promotion activities. So the CDC administers the preventative health and health services block grant and specific preventative health grants by providing program expertise and assistance in responding to both federal, state, local, and private organizations on matters that relate to disease prevention and control. This is what the CDC is probably most famous for. So given that background shape, we can then focus on the aims of NAPISA. So the aim of NAPISA is to provide integrated and coordinated disease and injury surveillance, research, monitoring, and evaluation of services and interventions directed towards major public health problems affecting persons in South Africa. Its core functions will be firstly to coordinate surveillance systems that monitor diseases and injuries, secondly to provide specialized reference laboratory and referral services, thirdly to provide training and workforce development, and fourthly to conduct research and support public health interventions aimed at reducing the burden of disease. In terms of how it will be structured, NAPISA will constitute of three existing institutions: the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, which exists currently, the National Institute for Occupational Health. We have amended it slightly to call it Occupational Safety and Health, because safety in the workplace is as important as health in the workplace. Thirdly, the National Cancer Registry, which currently exists. And then fourthly, two additional institutes will be developed. The first is the National Institute for Non-Communicable Diseases and the National Institute for Injury and Violence Prevention, which is a significant part of our disease burden currently. So NAPISA will address the burden of disease and injuries faced by South Africans under a single organization that coordinates key public health functions and data systems. The role of NAPISA, well, South Africa has significant strength in terms of core public health functions and operations, in terms of surveillance and assessment of the population health, identifying health problems and health hazards, health-related research, health protection operations, the evaluation of quality and effectiveness of personal and community health services, and ensuring a competent public health and personal health care workforce. In terms of the functions, It will firstly coordinate and maintain surveillance systems in terms of the collection, analysis, and interpretation of health data so that that could guide health interventions. Secondly, to use health and population data to advise on setting health priorities, policies, and plans. To use public health information to monitor and evaluate policies and interventions that have been implemented. To coordinate with the reference laboratories and referring services. To provide leadership and direction to provinces and local authorities on these matters. To strengthen capacity of the health workforce and health surveillance to reduce the burden of disease and injury. And then to strengthen cross-border and regional public health efforts as well. So specifically, NAPISA must strengthen epidemiology and surveillance systems in these areas, must advise the minister on strategies to improve the health of the population, support the health response and provide recommendations to government and control measures for disease outbreaks, to collaborate with other government departments and government agencies to implement communication strategies on public health issues and outbreaks, and to provide technical support to all spheres of government as well as regulatory bodies on surveillance of communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases, injuries, and violence, as well as occupational health. Specifically, NAPISA must conduct research to inform policy and guidelines in these areas, strengthen the cross-border, regional, and international collaboration, strengthen advocacy, social mobilization, and partnerships, and provide training and technical information in each of these areas. NAPISA will contribute to human resource development, maintain an accredited reference and specialized laboratory for pathogen detection, disease surveillance, and outbreak response, and provide specialized and referral services relating to occupational safety and health. In terms of the organizational structure, the National Institute for Public Health in NAPISA will have a board. That board would then have a CEO, and the CEO will then have a divisions. Each division is illustrated in the slide. If I can just give you the high-level activities. The first is the Institute for Communicable Diseases. The second is the Occupational Safety and Health. The third is the non-communicable, and the fourth is violence prevention. There will clearly be management and operational issues that the Institute would have to have some support in. Additionally, there will be scientific services as well as policy research and analysis work that have to be done. So in terms of the bill itself, Chair, the bill is divided into clauses. I'm not sure if you'd like me to go through each clause like I did yesterday.
Yes, I think it will be important to do that, but I wanted to check with the honourable members if they want you to complete the presentation, or they will appreciate if they want you to pause and get some clarities, or we'll get all those after the presentation. Can you continue with the presentation, then we'll check all questions. After that, honourable members, are you fine? You do have the copy of the NAPISA bill, so we'll follow the same
approach. So, Chair, clause one provides for definitions. That's on page numbered 5, and it starts on page number 5, and it includes definitions for the minister, for NAPISA, for the term prescribed, for the Public Finance Management Act, public health, public health sector, surveillance, as well as for what this act means. So those are the definitions that are currently included. And then if we go to clause 2, this provides for the establishment of the Public Health Institute, and basically establishing NAPISA as a juristic person, and to be known as the National Public Health Institute of South Africa, comprising of the various units outlined, which is communicable diseases, non-communicable diseases, occupational health, cancer surveillance, and injury and violence prevention. So NAPISA will be a public health entity as defined in Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act. Then Clause 3 deals with the functions, powers, and duties of NAPISA. And these are outlined in Clause 3 of the bill, which is, I see the page number on top is page 3. And it has functions that start at A and go all the way to ZB. In terms of functions itself, it stops at function number X, I think it is. So I'm not sure if you want me to go through each one, or no, not necessarily. Okay. Under 2, which is subsection 2, for the purpose of subsection 1E, referral services means any specialist services that require specialized knowledge, skills, and intervention. And it then outlines what NAPISA may do in terms of its work with other institutions, and that goes on from A through to ZB. Chair, if I can then go to clause 4, which deals with the governance of NAPISA. So NAPISA will be governed and controlled in accordance with the Act, which means it will have a board, and the board will be the accounting authority, and it must ensure that it fulfills its responsibility in terms of Chapter 6 of the Public Finance Management Act. Clause 5 provides for the composition of the here, the board will consist of the following members. Firstly, an official from the National Department of Health. Two members who have specialized knowledge in economics, finance, accounting, and legal matters. And then seven members comprising one each with specialized knowledge in the areas that NAPISA would be involved in, which is communicable diseases, non-communicable, cancer surveillance, injury and violence prevention, occupational health, field epidemiology, as well as environmental health. There will also be one community representative. The chief financial officer will NAPISA, by virtue of his office, be a member of the board. So will the chief executive officer of NAPISA also be a member of the board. One member nominated by schools of public health that are publicly funded from the higher education institutions will also become a member. Then clause 6 deals with the appointment of members of the board. Here the minister must, after appointing members of the board contemplated in 5.1b by notice in the Gazette and in two other nationally circulating newspapers, invite interested persons to nominate people to be part of the board, and within that specified period, such interested persons must make representation. If a suitable person or required a number of persons is not nominated in accordance with subsection 1, the minister may appoint an appropriate person who qualifies to be appointed in terms of this act. The minister must appoint the community representative following nominations by the respective provincial members of the Executive Council responsible for health. A member of the board holds office for a period of at least 5 years, as the minister may determine at the point of appointment, and is eligible for reappointment. A member of the board, excluding a member who is a full-time employment of the state, must be appointed on such conditions as the minister may, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, determine. This relates largely to the remuneration of members of the board. And if the number of members of the board is reduced to such an extent that a quorum cannot be obtained, and then the minister may appoint suitably qualified persons on a temporary basis to serve on the board for a period no longer than 12 months until new members are appointed in terms of subsection 5. Chair, then if we move to clause 7, which is the appointment of the chair and vice chair of the board. The The minister may appoint the chairperson and the vice chair from members contemplated. Whenever the chairperson of the board is absent or is unable to perform his or her function, then the vice chair must act as a chairperson. And if he or she is absent or unable to act as a chair, then members may designate another member from the board to then perform this function. Any person acting as a chairperson of the board in terms of this subsection 2 can perform all of the functions related to the chair. Then clause 8 deals with the disqualification from membership of the board, the vacation of office by a member, removal of members of the board, and the dissolution of the board. So 8.1 is where a member may be appointed as a member of the board if he or she is not a South African citizen, an ordinary resident, is an unrehabilitated, is insolvent, convicted of a criminal offense, is removed from an office of trust, is an employee of NAPISA, and is disqualified in terms of Section 69 of the Companies Act. A member of the board must vacate his or her office when he becomes disqualified or submits his resignation to the minister or is declared by the High Court to be of unsound mind or mentally disordered in terms of Mental Health Care Act, or has to leave the board, has not been attending a board meeting, for more than 2 consecutive meetings, and then ceases to be an ordinary resident of the Republic. Then in terms of 3, a member who obviously passes on or vacates the office, the minister may then appoint another person to fill that vacancy, and the minister may remove a board member from office on account of misconduct or inability to perform his or her function. The minister may dissolve the board for failure to perform its function and duties. In terms of clause 9, which deals with the meetings of the board, it outlines how the board should conduct its business in terms of its rules which the board should determine. There should be a quorum for each meeting with the majority of members, that a decision of the members of the board at any meeting constitutes a decision of the board, that a decision taken by the board or any act performed under the authority of the board is not valid by reason only of a vacancy on the board, that minutes and proceedings of every meeting of the board must be prepared and entered in a book, and the meetings and proceedings of each board must be submitted at the next meeting as minutes of that meeting. So those are largely the procedures for the meetings of the board. Then if we go to clause 10, which is the committees of the board may, in order to assist the performance, have one or more committees of the board. These expert advisory committees consist of members of the board, other than members of the, any other members of that may be available. In terms of appointment of the CEO, that's under clause 11, the board must, in consultation with the minister, appoint a fit and proper, suitably qualified South African citizen as the CEO of NAPISA. The CEO will hold office for a term of 5 years and may be reappointed for one additional term of 5 years. The appointment of a person as a CEO is subject to a conclusion of a written performance agreement. The board and the CEO may, in writing and by agreement, amend that agreement, and the board may, in consultation with the minister, remove the CEO from office on account of serious misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence. If the CEO is unable to perform his or her functions, or during a vacancy of the office of the CEO, the board may, after consultation with the minister, designate another employee to act as the CEO. No person may be designated as an acting CEO for a period longer than 180 days. In terms of the functions of the CEO, the CEO is effectively the administrative head of NAPISA and will be responsible for the proper and diligent implementation of the Public Finance Management Act, and must appoint suitably qualified persons as employees of NAPISA in accordance with the organizational structure. And as administrative head, the CEO is responsible for the delivery of the mandate of NAPISA, the development of internal rules and directives, organization and control of staff, maintenance of discipline, and effective deployment and utilization of the staff, signing of memoranda with other key stakeholders, issuing of guidelines, making the annual report, financial statements and audit reports available and submit them to Parliament timely. They exercise many other powers that may be the responsibility of the CEO. The CEO must, upon request by the Minister, also furnish the Minister with a report with respect to any case or matter that the Minister may raise with the CEO, and provide the Minister with reasons for any decision taken by NAPISA, the board of the CEO, and of any employee of an employer for NAPISA. In terms of Clause 13, it deals with the transfer and secondments of certain persons to and from the employment of NAPISA. Here, a person who is in full-time employment of the state or institution receiving financial aid from the state may, with his or her consent, subject to the laws governing the public service and approval of the CEO, be transferred or seconded to the employer of NAPISA. This would facilitate the transfer of staff. A person who is an employer of NAPISA may, with his or her consent, subject to the laws governing the public service and approval of the CEO, be transferred or seconded to the employer of the state. A person who is an employer of another institution may, with his or her consent and subject to the applicable laws and approval of the CEO of that institution, be transferred or seconded. A person who is an employer of NAPISA may, with his or her consent, subject to the laws governing public service and then approval of the CEO, be transferred and seconded to other institutions. The rights, privileges, and benefits of an employee contemplated in this section by virtue of his or her conditions of employment as an employee of NAPISA, the state, or the institution receiving financial aid from the state may not be adversely affected by the transfer or secondment. That's part of a clause within labor law as well. Then moving to Clause 14, Chair, which deals with intellectual property rights. The rights in respect of any invention or design or any work eligible for copyright protection by an employee of NAPISA is in the course and scope of the employee's employment vest in NAPISA. Then secondly, NAPISA may, at its discretion by subject of such conditions as the minister may determine, assign or dispose of any rights contemplated in subsection 1. Subsection 3, NAPISA must, in respect of research conducted by employees of NAPISA, subject that to properly informed consent, ensure that the work is conducted in respect of indigenous knowledge, written information transfer and material transfer agreements, protect with the consent of the parties any work, invention, discovery and improvement. And then subsection 4 is the rights in respect of an invention or design properly registered in the Republic in terms of subsection 1, a vested with NAPISA or assigned to NAPISA in terms of subsection 2, in that invention, financial participation by him or her in respect of proceeds derived from such invention. And basically, NAPISA must ensure that the person contemplated in 4 receives payment contemplated in that subsection timely. And NAPISA must, with regard to research conducted by employees of NAPISA in the area under jurisdiction of a traditional leader, notify the National House of Traditional Leaders in writing of his intention to conduct such research. Then subsection 15 deals with the finances of NAPISA. So NAPISA will be able to receive funds appropriated by Parliament, any fees that may be received from services that NAPISA would render, any income it may earn on surplus monies deposited or invested, grants, donations and bequests made to it, any royalties it may obtain, as well as money received from any other source that may want to provide funds to NAPISA. In terms of delegation of its functions, the board may, subject to conditions it may determine, delegate to the chairperson, any member or committee of the board or the CEO, any function entrusted to the board under this act. And the CEO may delegate to any employee of NAPISA any function entrusted to the CEO under this act as well. A delegation in terms of subsection 1 or 2 doesn't preclude the performance of function of the board or the CEO as the case may be. So that the organization can function effectively. The delegation of function in terms of subsection 1 and 2 must be in writing, may at any time be amended or revoked, and does not divest the board or the CEO from their responsibilities. In terms of limited liability, which is clause 17, no member of the board, employee of NAPISA, or any other person performing work of NAPISA is liable in respect of anything done or omitted in good faith and performance of any functions in terms of this act. In terms of clause 18, it makes provisions for regulations where the minister may make regulations relating to any matter related to this act, disease and injury surveillance, and any ancillary or administrative or procedural matter that is necessary to prescribe for the proper implementation or administration of this act. Before the minister makes his regulations, he or she will have to publish a draft regulation in the Gazette, calling on interested persons to comment in writing within a period stated in the notice of not less than 30 days from the date of publication. If the minister alters the draft regulations, he or she need not publish these alterations before making the regulations. In terms of subsection 19, it deals with the transfer of certain property belonging to the state to NAPISA. Any immovable property that belongs to the state may be transferred to NAPISA under such conditions as the minister, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, may determine in order to enable NAPISA to perform its functions. And then subsection 20 deals with the transfer of employees, assets and liabilities from the National Health Laboratory Services to NAPISA. And subsection 1 deals with the person who is an employee of the NHLS, established by section 3 of this act, who was transferred to the NHLS in terms of subsection 2, and taking account of the Labour Relations Act, will then be transferred into NAPISA. That the remuneration and other terms and conditions of the transfer may not be less favourable than what the person is currently receiving. Subsection 3, that the person transferred to NAPISA in terms of subsection 1 remains subject to any decisions, proceedings, rulings and directions applicable to that person. 4 deals with any proceedings against such a person which are pending immediately or before his or her transfer. 5 deals with the purpose of the Income Tax Act, and no person or employee may be regarded as having taken place when the person contemplated in 1 takes up employment at NAPISA. And when employees referred to in 1 are transferred to NAPISA, all assets and liabilities of the NHLS referred to in that subsection that are transferred to the NHLS in terms of item 2 of the schedule of the NHLS Act must be transferred and vested in NAPISA on the same date. So the short, and then clause 21 deals with the short title. The act will be called the National Public Health Institute of South Africa Act of 2017. And it will come into operation on a date fixed by the President by proclamation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. Honourable members, there is the presentation. Just to remind members that today we are to focus on clarity, because we are still going to have our own time for deliberations. So I will then open to members for clarity, starting from the first presentation, which was giving us the background and the purposes, the purpose and lessons from other countries, and then taking us through the bill itself. Any takers? Honorable Kupani?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, my first question is with regard to the board. I just want to find out, the board is the accounting officer. Why not the CEO? Maybe they can explain why not the CEO be the accounting officer. The other thing, Chair, in terms of clause 14, the copyright it clearly says that it lies with NAPISA, but I just wanted to find out, is it not going to be a deterrent to attract to suitable qualified people? The other chair is with regard to the clause 6. It is clearly said that board members will be appointed for a period not less than 5 years. Why 5 years? Why not 3 years? As the same as the NHL, as it, maybe they can explain that to us, Chair. My last question, Chair, I just want to find out with regard to the existing organizations that are dealing with research. I hear May, she tried to explain, but I couldn't get it really. In terms of the conflict, what is going to happen with the research on communicable disease, non-communicable disease? Are those existing bodies, will they be incorporated? How is it going to be? Can you please clarify their role with regard to the existing bodies? Thank you.
Okay, from my side, I've got just a few, one or two. Oh, honorable.
Thank you very much and good morning. I just wanted to get some clarity on page six of this in connection with the board. The composition of the board, specifically with reference to D, one community representative, and G, one member nominated by the schools of public health. I just need to know what guided you on the choice of only one community member representative and only one member from the school, given the problem of non-attendance of member, as it can be anticipated as a problem. Would it not have been better if at least there were two community members elected into board? The same applies to two members nominated by the schools of public health within publicly funded higher education institutions, so that if one member is not present, because the voice of the community plays an important role also here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Those 14 talk about copyright which vest in the MAPISA. Could this not deter very sensitive people who work for MAPISA doing research and things like that, and said they don't have any right to whatever they find, if they find something, because scientists always like to think that whatever they discover, they have to have the copyright. And how do you remove liability from people who work for NAPISA, considering that there's going to be a wide array of people who are going to work for NAPISA, and some may be negligent, some may be set up and all sorts of things? How do you have a blanket cover for them? And how do you explain to the people who are going to be working on, who are going to be inclined to say that whatever happens to you, they are going to cite the declaratory note that if anything happens to me, I hereby agree that if anything happens to me, I don't hold these people liable or what. I just want to know how is the mechanism of giving them the liability cover. And close to occupational health, how will the function of NAPISA overlap with that of and functions of Compensation Commission of Occupational Diseases? Or is it because it's going to be incorporated in NAPISA? I don't know. Is NAPFISA just going to be some oversight body to make sure, coordinate the work of all these other people, or they are going to really absorb the functions and control them? Thank you.
In the absence of other hands, James.
Thank you, Chair. I must also welcome the presentation. But there's just one challenge that I've got to understand. NAPFISA is expected to strengthen advocacy, social mobilization. What is going to happen to the departments that have been doing that? Are they also going to be incorporated? Are you going to partner with those different departments in order to also, you know, be part of that strengthening of advocacy and so on? And also, how is it going to be facilitated? Is it going to be under, is it going to reside under the presidency or under the Minister of Health? Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Just one question, but I think the others I have been made. Honorable Timobayo responded to in terms of the number of community members that are on the board. I just wanted to check whether will it be after all that has been, how are communities going to be made aware of this very important institute? Is it going to be its responsibility, or is it going to be the responsibility of the Department of Health of ensuring that everybody understands the act? In terms of the why NAPFISA, you did mention some of the institutions, but as you say, there is no current integrated system with different institutions. Is it the institutions that you have cited, or there are other institutions outside the ones that have been cited in the presentation, the presentation that you yeah. I think I'm fine. In terms of numbers of meetings, should it really be two? Or I think in line with the question yesterday, can't it be three? Because I think two is too much restrictive. All right. Oh, Honorable Kopana and Honorable Mansela again.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, one thing that is also worrying me, I see there's a lot of, in terms of the responsibilities of NAPFISA, it's about almost four pages of responsibilities that are listed here. It's like NAPFISA is going to take over everything. If maybe they can explain, how did they come about developing this, this responsibilities? And how is it going to literally affect? Because it's like taking over other responsibilities of other people. If maybe you can explain further for us. Thank you.
How is this going to work, that the board is the accounting body instead of the CEO? What will be the limits or the functions of the CEO?
Thank you very much, Dichi. Those are the questions of clarity for now.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to others. Some I will defer to Dr. Pili. Chair, I would like to refer members to the National Health Service, Laboratory Service Act, that actually established the National Health Laboratory Service. If you go to the section that abolished various bodies, and I'm raising that because it is linked to what members were asking in terms of the functions, but relationship between NIOH and COD. Now, we had a number of institutions that existed before, and these were the following. I'll read them out so that we understand how NHLS was established. Now, these institutions existed in their own right. But what happened is that when the National Health Laboratory Service Act was formulated, there was then a provision that said the South African National Health Laboratory Service will be almost like an umbrella of all these other institutions. The specific provisions actually abolished bodies and laboratories, meaning you are creating a National Health Laboratory Service. But then in that process, because you don't know what to do with multiple bodies, you just put them under the National Health Laboratory Service. And I think this is what we are trying to correct. The South African Institute for Medical Research. Now, this is different from South African Medical Research Council, meaning historically, we had a body called South African Institute for Medical Research, existing along the same line as the South African Medical Research Council. So those functions were just parked under South African National Health Laboratory Service. The second was the National Institute for Virology. The third was the National Center for Occupational Health. The fourth was Forensic Chemistry Laboratories, meaning the Forensic Chemistry Laboratories chair. They do blood alcohol, food and so on. They were also supposed to fall under NHLS. All provincial health laboratories, meaning all provincial health laboratories, they've got a very distinct function. The forensic chemistry labs, they also have a distinct function. Center for Occupational Health, National Institute of Virology, South African Institute for Medical Research. Now, because they didn't have a home, they just put all under National Health Laboratory Service Act. Now, if you go back, you'll see that those kind of functions, if you read the whole National Health Laboratory Service Act, there is no description of these functions. They just happen because NICD falls under NHLS. So if you want to understand detailed functions of what NICD does or what NIOH does, it's not written anywhere in law because they were just parked. So it was almost like a parking space. If you read the whole National Health Service Act, and I know that Dr. Pili says it's not subject to the, PFMA. Mm-hmm. It does make reference to that. But the manner in which they function, you have executive directors. You have an executive director of NICD who prepares a proper report and so on. But because they are parked under NHLS, everything is reported under NHLS. So it's a very, it's a bit of a dislocation. Then you have KZN, which was supposed to have been incorporated in 2009. If you read the annual report of NHLS that has presented and the problems that you have of non-payment by provinces, in fact, KZN has been one province that said, we actually don't want to be incorporated. But the law, they were forced by the law, but they said, we're happy with what we have. If you listened yesterday to the presentation by Dr. Pili, he made it very clear that KZN, remember the former homeland systems, all homeland did not have labs at all. But KZN historically had a self-governing state. It was not at a homeland, but they had lab services. So with the new province, they said they were not going to be incorporated. They were actually resisting incorporation. So it has been KZN saying, we want to continue as we've been, but they were forced by the law. So what we are trying to say is that there are functions that are public health functions. They are not diagnostic laboratory services that are linked to clinical care. Now, because we've just bundled everything together, we're saying we need some semblance of order of some sort. Have clinical care, diagnostic services, and have these functions that are actually public health functions, and create an appropriate institution. So we pulled all of them together under one umbrella. So South African Institute for Medical Research, and that's the confusion also, because if you retain South African Institute for Medical Research and you have Medical Research Council, people would never have known the difference between the two. It is for that reason that, in my introductory remarks, I said you actually need a public health institution and you need an institution that conducts research so that you differentiate the two. But Chair, I didn't raise the other. Now, there are instances where you have, and I don't want to raise alarm or scare people, where you have chemical spills, where you have nuclear spills, like Chernobyl or, you had in Japan. But also instances where you have bioterrorism. An institution that responds to all those kind of disasters and threats is this one that we're presenting before you. Historically, it would probably have been your National Institute of Virology that will look at what I describe as, your biological material. It's those kind of people, because you then create, in fact, we have that in South Africa. We have what we call a BSL-4 lab. It's a lab that handles highly infectious pathogens that must not be handled by anybody. So you have to protect that institution. It's an institution that must be under government control. You don't leave it to run. You don't leave it to be without funds, at the risk of, provinces have not paid. It must be funded directly. It must be protected. So you really need to secure an institution like that. So I was given that background so that we know. With regard to research, in fact, this is precisely my point. There is a clause, if you read the National Health Service Act, it was saying about operational research. They do have to conduct operational research because they have to look at different assays that they use, in the labs and so on. They must still conduct a certain level of research. But perhaps maybe what is provided under O, where it says coordinate research, it's probably broad. It might be limited so that it's very specific and it doesn't conflict provisions of the Medical Research Council Act, because their competence and mandate is research. The next one, Chair, about, I think I answered NIOAC, CCOD. CCOD and NIOH. NIOH actually is the one that is supposed to do surveillance. It's the one that is supposed to collect data. about occupation-specific diseases. But if you have a question about whether, you know, a building is safe or not, and there's air quality or, you know, environmental-related as well as occupation-related hazards, they are the ones who are supposed to tell us and do surveillance and collect data and so on. But they do not do compensation. They do not say, as a result of this harm that has been caused to employees, this is how they should be compensated and this is how we're going to compensate. It's not their mandate and it's not their competence. And I wanted to differentiate between the two. The representation in terms of community and the institutions, for instance, public health institutions, I think it's a valid one. Maybe it needs to be relooked as members study the law. Perhaps it's one area that can be improved. Information to the members of the public. Chair, my view is that every institution that has a mandate to protect the public is their mandate to inform the public and educate the public, whether about harms, about hazards, or public health, it actually should reside with this institution. The 3 years, yes, we had yesterday, and I think even for this one, it should be relevant. So for the functions, I explained that it's functions of about 5 different institutions that were incorporated. But if you read the existing act, you don't even see them anywhere. You just know there's NICD, but there are no functions, because the functions that are reflected in the act are for any, for the labs, which is fine. But then the others were just buried under me, assumed. So we were lifting them so that people know that there are these institutions that were put together under one number. Well, Chair, the copyright, let me just address a principle. Because I've been an advocate for open source and access to information, we've had debates both locally and globally, to say that if research is conducted using public funds, it should be available. Nobody should claim intellectual property personally conducting research using public funds and public institutions. It's an ongoing debate on IP that will be, you know, information should be available and accessible. If people use their own resources personally to discover anything, it's within their right to protect that in terms of intellectual property law. But if you work for an institution and you've used public funds, you've used the taxpayers' money, and you use that and say you've discovered something for yourself, it cannot be right, Chair. This is what, even for access to medicines, what we've been arguing on intellectual property, that there must be an open source that can be used to advance knowledge and science, but equally that it should be used in such a way that there are particular reward systems that people should be, recognized or reimbursed, but they should not own that intellectual property personally when public funds have been used.
Thanks, Jen. I think DG dealt with most of the questions. The only two questions, the one relating to the board, just to say a Section 3 entity in terms of the PFMA requires a board, and the board is the accounting authority responsible for that institution. The board appoints a CEO who's the officer that would be responsible for the running of the organization and reports to the board. That's a governance structure across all our public entities. And then I think the question relating to liability of employees. When an employee is employed in a company, he or she would have to comply with the, rules and regulations of that company. Where they transgress, there are obviously measures to deal with that through disciplinary processes, etc. And so obviously if it's of a criminal nature, then criminal law will take over. But if it's of a misconduct and the like, then the organization would have rules dealing with how they deal with such employees. I think those were the main questions, Chair. I don't know if we missed out any.
Just out of interest, I'm putting myself in the shoes of an ordinary person in terms of this act. And this thing is triggered by the response from the region. Napisa, you will see that at times there are areas where people are working in unsafe environment, staying in buildings that are not safe for that. Just to make my that this body will then be able to alert the whichever department that it is then supposed to do that to. For instance, environmental affairs, the management of, let me talk towards the health sector, of medical waste, how it is then being disposed. It's will it have. Now, the question that comes from me, because of the magnitude of this work, the capacity of this institution is, I know I may be, the capacity of this institution, because you're talking about a volume, talking about the country, and therefore its capacity, is it really going to be able to, including the workforce of the sector itself. Remember that the department we have also been looking into dealing with that, but there is a cry out there of the shortage of staff, whatever. How then is it, when it then is sensitized, I'm making an example, the Department of Health, which is then going to, which is going to say, if then the workforce in this area is of this amount, is going to create a danger. Remember, that goes with resources, money, the involvement of treasury. Is treasury at some point, if I may ask, is it not going to create a little bit of a delay in areas where they pick up that this is to happen? I'm raising this issue because I'm just having I'm trying to visualize this, because this is going to be one of the most important institutes in our country. The second one is, the examples are, is there any country in the African region that we would have made an example of? I see here it's Canada, it's the United States, it's China, it's Mexico. Are you trying to tell me that in the African region we don't have any countries that would have an example of institutes of this nature that they have created? I think those are, it's more of some political questions that was, as we will be going through this act, we've also got the responsibility of explaining as public representatives exactly what is this act trying to address. So those are the questions for me. The last one will be the explanation that you have made to us. I'm humbly requesting if you can just put that in a two-pager, please, because obviously, you know, we're going to have public hearings, we are going to, media is going to, so we don't want to fumble. It's quite a highly technical being for but it deals with, in my view, it deals with day, it's going to be dealing with day-to-day lives and conditions of the entire country. So that is what I...
No, thank you, Chair. I will also give our colleague at the back who used to head the NIOH. Chair, NIOH has existed in this country. The reason we won't know about its functions, its capacity, is because it's buried under NHLS. She used to be the executive director of NIOH. It's still there, but it's hidden. If you read the National Health Laboratory Service, NICD, it's National Institute for Communicable Diseases, but it's buried. In the Act, it's not referred to. You don't know what its function is. You don't know what it does. NIOH is equally buried, but these are institutions that, like I say, multiple institutions. Now the anxiety, Chair, about the capacity exists, it's there. That's why you are not aware of it, because every time you want the annual report, the presentation, you want the APP, it's NHLS that comes. You never get to hear about NICD. You never get to hear about NIOH. You never, in fact, Chair, with the cancer story that's making headlines, the National Cancer Registry also falls under the same institution. So here you are actually getting them to have a proper mandate to be, so that they can come and account here formally to Parliament. They must be able to come and say, you know, this is the disease profile in the country, this is, you know, the concerns that we have, and so on and so on. So at the moment, they are buried, and it's purely because they were just parked there. If you read the Act, we abolished, and just said because they're under the labs, you know, it's enough, and it cannot be. With regard to the African region, my colleagues were saying that we actually have 21 in the continent, 21 public health institutes. They actually have their own association. We've even convened conferences, actually. We've hosted conferences. But they won't be the same as the South African, because ours is historical, number one. Number two, remember, we are probably, how many BSL-4 levels do we have in the world? In the continent, we're the only one.
Two now, there's one in Gabon as well. It's just recently opened.
Yes, meaning Gabon is the second, but still in terms of capacity, we've had that status for a while now. It's not everybody who can handle a highly infectious pathogens, you must be assigned that status. Meaning, even if we compare with other institutions in the continent, they cannot have the capability that we have. But what we are trying to rectify here is that with NHLS, with all its financial problems because of the funding model, we're actually compromising an institution that should be protecting us.
I think, as you have said, that all these acts have been hidden somewhere, which then has created a level of ignorance, not deliberate. And that we have always been under the impression that at the end, I'm trying to pause. When I was still on training, I know of the South African Institute of Medical Research. That's what we knew at the time. That was in our institutions. Then, as time goes on, the birth of the National Health of NHLS. But this thing that we have always been, that it is solely the the Department of Health's responsibility to ensure that ABCD happens. Yes, but the importance of these institutions that are going to enable the National Department of Health to execute its mandate. I think that is very important, including ourselves. But more and above is the role, the capacity, the empowerment of our people to understand that there are these institutions. These institutions are not institutions for high-powered presentations and questions are in this room, but outside these rooms, how do we ensure that ordinary people, they understand? And I may make an example, you'll pardon me. When there's a dumping place where our people build shacks because it's an open space, they don't know that in fact there can be gas that can erupt from there. How then do we? So I'm just thinking that we, as we move on, and in this, people will say, 23 years, democracy, it's now that things are then beginning to come up and shape, but ensuring that public representatives are more empowered in understanding. I'm trying to put this because at the end, it's an act that, yes, it is to be academic and technical in nature, but it is to be, it's going to be your responsibility to ensure that it is reader-friendly for ordinary people to understand, because it's also about, in fact, it's about protecting and ensuring that the center is able to deliver as it is then supposed to do. So I wanted to thank. We're still going to have deliberations as the committee, but the information that we have requested, DG, if you can be able to give us that by the end of this week, so that when we sit, when we deliberate, obviously there will be people that will have interest. The only question that I would like to just for formal response, how many in terms of NHLS, how many presentations, what submissions have you received as the department, and also this, because we want to, and also NAPISA, because as we will be preparing for public hearings, we'll also want to gauge the audience that is then going to be there. I see here there's something in the act talking about traditional, the house of traditional. So we have got I hope as we are, maybe as the committee, I hope the secretariat will also be looking into that, because it will also be important that as we move, we take them through it, because it is quite a very sensitive area of which we are then, ensure that we will then have to look into that. But I don't know whether there are any comments from members. I find it quite an interesting day, and it's going to be very interesting. Honorable Gonzo, there to be Honorable Kopan.
Chair, your request for a two-pager, I'm not sure if I heard who is asking the department to include the number of countries that have the same kind of institute, which I found it very, very encouraging. To know that there is at least 21 countries included as part.
part of other than China, the Americas, and the United States. Thanks for that question. But I would like to ask for empowerment when we are in the outreach. You know, could also make mention of this. Thank you.
Honorable Cooper.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just wanted clarity in terms of the funding models. I can see according to the clause 3, subsection 2, there's a leasehold of how the money is. But I want to find out the other means. Will you also raise funds? And maybe the other thing is the cost implication of the whole thing. If it becomes a law, how much is it going to cost us? Do we have that money?
So, Chair, perhaps just the request you made, what we committed, I think it must have been during our presentation of the APP, that South Africa is going through the joint external evaluation, JEE, in terms of the international health regulations. So what I was offering is that we probably need to empower this committee by getting you copies of the IHR, International Health Regulations, by getting you also, because our JEE is supposed to take place in, we've actually asked that they move it because we anticipated that there'll be public hearings. And we didn't want to be having JEE whilst we're having, because we'll be in Cape Town. So, perhaps share the two and examples of countries that have already done their JEE. For instance, in Africa in particular, Tanzania is the leading country. They have actually led. There aren't so many that have done countries that have done JEEs. But we also have to show that it's in preparation for compliance. So a law like this is intended to help us. So it would be good for the committee to see what the expectations are. Where I see financial implications is actually not with this law, because this already exists. But the risk is the funding, we actually transfer money to NHLS, and then NHLS allocates internally. Or NIOH, NICD, cancer registry. But here we're saying they need to have their own dedicated funding directly. They get that anyway at the moment. But the risk is with this uncertainty, we're putting these institutions at risk. So we can just give you the budget as it exists for now. Where we think there will be demands is when we've done our JEE as a country to comply with the international health regulations. But that is not law, that is our obligations as a country. So we will probably have to come back and say, as a country, these are the things that we're supposed to have in place. As an example, Chair, we have radiation control and we have the nuclear regulator. The manner in which the regulatory system works is that they look at how they regulate institutions that use material that has, that may be sources, radiation sources. But they don't have this institution is in the event that we have a nuclear spill as a country. For argument's sake, they are the ones that will be, they have, we say they have what we call disease detectives. They go even beyond disease detectives. They employ disease detectives. You know, disease detectives go out there and investigate. It will be for nuclear spills, for chemical spills, for food-related disasters, and disease outbreaks. So they've got this mandate, environmental disasters. I mean, I can make a list. Now, if you look at our IHR and obligations, where we talk about the core capacities of countries, we can tick a box in South Africa and say, yes, in terms of the core capacities we have. But when there's a disaster, it's only then that you know whether we have or we don't. So this is an institution that must, on an ongoing basis, ensure that there is preparedness. There is preparedness. So you need a dedicated institution that ensures that there is preparedness. When we link with the communities, what the JEE does is to say, in the event, because when we had the outbreak in West Africa, one of the things that contributed to the spread of disease was the practices. So you also need anthropologists to understand the practices on the ground, because the burial practices in West Africa was such that, and I think it's also a practice in our country, people touch bodies, they wash bodies, and in that process spread disease. Now, in the event we have an outbreak, that link with our cultural practices, why you will need your a traditional, it's for that reason. It's not just the scientific process, it's also how this whole process interacts with communities, how you educate the public on how we respond while respecting the cultural processes and so on. So it's when I share material, then Chen realize the significance of this body. And then we'll share also examples like Tanzania and maybe Uganda that have done their JEEs. Just to, what is it that is expected?
JEE, the full name?
Joint External Evaluation.
Oh. Just a very last clarity from my side. You talked about traditional leaders, the house of traditional leaders. Because we've got also religious beliefs. So this issue of touching of bodies, it will not be important that we balance that, so that as we move, we don't find a particular center having a problem. I think, honourable members, thank you very much, DG. I so wish we could have had this have some more time of going through and getting some clarities, making to understand. Because remember, when we come back in August, we will be then preparing with the busy with public hearings. So that is why some of the requests. And honourable members, I think we've come to the end of the presentation. It is the ball is then in our courts in going through some. We'll circulate the information when it has been submitted by the department. And so it is really the beginning of a very, and now I understand why the department was a bit anxious about this bill in ensuring that as parliament we pass it into law, it's basically for the benefit of the ordinary people who are walking around not knowing what is happening around them. And thank you very much. I would request the members to just for some announcement as the department is leaving. Thank you very much, Dick.